Session number 12913.
Bellows Real Fall.
He had a head like a billiard ball. Didn't have a hair on it. He was a real old soldier. He was in the water as they started bombing. He ran out of the water, grabbed hold of his tin hat, plonked it on his head, and ran back in again. But worst thing he could have done. And if you could have seen those men running around, all wet through, not a stitch of clothing on, and when they all got up, they were all covered in sand. It was quite a laugh. This was some of the sort of things that we did. And another strange thing was, I was out with one of the companies, and laying out in front of the pillboxes was a tent. Part of it had collapsed. And by a tent, I mean a marquee. And it was surrounded with barbed wire. Now, we thought it was full of like military equipment of some sort. But I was curious. And one night I crawled out and got under the wire, got inside this tent. And it was full up with cases of beer. Every night after that, I used to take a sandbag and take one case of beer and go back and share it out with my mates. Everyone wondered where I got it from, but I would never say, because if I'd have said, everybody would have gone out and they would have found out about it, and that would have been the lot. So I don't know what happened to it, but I had my share. And those pillboxes on the desert, if you were in one of those when they were bombing, it was like being in, well, it appeared as if the boxes were jumping all over the desert. They rocked and jumped and filled up with sand. It was one of the most horrifying experiences you could ever experience. I was on line party one day, and I got caught out in an air raid. There appeared to be nothing near me, when all of a sudden, a voice shouted out, "Hey Jim, over here!" I looked over, and from a hole in the ground, there was a company storming on you. Like by the name of Darky Simons. I ran over, and this hole was steps leading straight down into like a burial chamber. And that's where all the company stores were. It must have been about 60 foot down. I went down there a bit smartish, I can tell you, because the bombs were dropping all around. But it was jet black when I got down there, except for the glimmer of a candle. But as my eyes got used to the darkness, because this candle was over the head in a niche in the wall, over the head of this storeman's bed. And by the side of it was a human skull. I said, what you got out there for then, darky? I didn't say that exactly. He said, "Well," he said, "looks nice, doesn't it, Jim?" I said, "Looks nice. Where'd you get it from?" Apparently, it was a young Bedouin girl had been killed in the bombing and buried. Another bomb had uncovered her. He'd found this skull, and it still had hair and flesh on it. He'd scrubbed it clean with caustic soda and had it over his bed and thought it was lovely. Lovely mentality. He'd been everything. He was covered in tattoos. He was a lumberjack and goodness knows what in his time. But That was his idea of beauty. But I was only too pleased to get down in his store that day, I can tell you. Right, now we must get on to the first desert push. Well, the push went in, and our tanks went in on the flank of the German, of the Italian positions. They were dug in exactly the same way as they would have been dug in the First World War. They were about long line of trenches with a curtain of barbed wire in front. They had machine gun redoubts put in every so often, but they were only about 3 foot 6 deep because, contrary to popular belief, the desert is not all sand. It's rock and hard rock. Now, the tanks really caught them, and they went down and they killed quite a lot of them. Now, among the dead, we found women. And apparently, well, we know they were prostitutes. The Italians indented for them exactly as we would have indented for a pair of socks. A brothel would visit each company and stay for a certain time till everyone had been satisfied, and then move on again. Now, on the main road, there's only the one road actually going through Mirza Matru. By the side of the road, Mussolini men had put up a monument to his victory. That was the bundle of sticks with an axe, which denotes united we stand, divided we fall sort of thing. Now, right in the middle of the road, one of these women had been killed. And I think nearly every vehicle in that first push must have gone over her, because she was just like a piece of leather laying there. She was so bad that you couldn't bury her, really. It was just, she seemed to be about 5 foot across and about 7 foot long by the time everything had gone over her. Now, we went on to a place called Puk Puk. And on the way into our position, came across, we were following up the main army, came across a lorry with an Italian soldier in it who'd been killed. The lorry caught fire and he was burnt to a cinder except for his right leg, which was sticking out. And it was as white as a hound's tooth. He had a long stocking on and a shoe. Didn't think much of it, but when we got into our positions, well, we took over the positions of Italians, their dugouts, and they used to use their grain sheets and be able to button them together and make a soundproof shelter for themselves. They were miles in advance of us with that sort of thing. All we had was our own grain sheets. But some of them didn't have tent poles, and they'd use their rifles as tent poles. So when they were attacked, they couldn't defend themselves. They had no rifles. Now, the first night we were in this position, I was told with my mate to do a roving patrol around our positions. We'd been out about 10 minutes, and a sandstorm suddenly cropped up, and it was a bad one. All we had was our rifles, because as it was a Roman patrol, there wasn't much possibility of any Italians because the army pushed in front. And we were out in the desert. And we'd been out about a couple of hours and really thought we'd had it, because you can wander around. If you carried on wandering around, you just get lost. And through the gloom of the sand, I saw this lorry. I said, well, hold up here till it's over. But when I got close to it, there was this leg sticking out. And I knew that we were actually only about, at the most, 400 yards in the direction of where that leg was pointing. And because of that, if we'd have carried on walking and hadn't seen that lorry, I don't know what would have happened to us. But that poor old dead eye tie, I reckon he saved our bacon that night. Then, while we were there, Christmas came round.
This is at Buck Buck.
This is at Buck Buck. Now, you had a water line running through that the Italians had laid. Goodness knows how many miles it ran. Very likely up to Saloon. But they'd impregnated it with salt water, so we couldn't use it. And water lorries had to go all the way back, some as far as Merzmetru, which was, I don't know how far back, but 100 miles, I suppose. And to get water. Now, water trucks used to go back for that. Now, we were dug in there, and because it's salt flats, you could only get down about 18 inches, because then water seeped up through and you would have been in salt water. Anyway, it was Christmas Eve and the rations had come up for Christmas Day. This was before you had all these compo rations and everything else. So consequently, they sent up, they said they'd sent up turkeys and goodness knows what. But it was all green by the time we had them, so they couldn't be used. So our Christmas dinner was brown stew. We only had one bottle of water a day, and half of that had to go into the cookhouse, so we weren't feeling too clever. Now the water trucks, when they went back, there's one chap in particular, he always mucked in with us when he come back. He always used to take, or he took back with him, as many eye tie, because Germans hadn't come in then, into the North Africa, as many eye tie water bottles as he could, and hung it all in his water truck, so that when he come back, he'd fill them up. This time he came back, and he handed over quite a few water. And these Jerry said, keep them quiet. He said, put them on one side till I comes back, which we did. When he came back, he said, what's the idea? He said, I was coming through a high tide position, he said, and the wind had uncovered some barrels that were in the sand, and they were full of vino. So he filled all these up with vino. And we had about the best Christmas we could have had. We were having a good old drink. Everybody else is dry, except us. And it was only enough for us, so we didn't pass it round, you see. And we were having a nice time. Now, one of the lads that was with us, he was bomb happy by then. Least sound, and he took off, and he started to say, it's all right for you, he said, it's Dutch courage. And he kept on. So in the end, we said to him, well, you better have some. So we forced him to drink a pint mug of vino. This knocked him over a bit. And there was a Heinkel came over the top. Flying pencil. And as he flew over, droning, this chap, he'd had his mug of vino and a little drop more, and grabbed a rifle, ran outside, started firing up at this Heinkel and calling him all the German so-and-sos under the world. We had to take it away from him. That was the bravest he'd ever been to. And ever was, I dare say, because we had to send him back eventually, because the CO found out about our vino, got hold of the water truck driver, it was too late, we'd had ours, said, where'd you get it from? Told him. He sent a party back to destroy all the bottle, all these barrels of vino, in case they'd been poisoned. Very intelligent man was our CO. I mean, we'd been drinking it all the day before, and he was afraid it might have been poisoned. If it had been poisoned, we would have been dead. So that was the mentality of our CO. Now they decided, some of these barrels, they cut them off, the top off, or took the tops off. And because we had plenty of water coming through that was half salt and half fresh, I used it for bathing. I said everybody had to have a bath. Well, this poor chap that was bomb happy, he was in having a bite naked in this barrel, cut down they were, with his tin hat on. And suddenly, from the direction of the saloon, they started a bombardment. And some of it got a bit closer. And, well, very likely our own guns as well opened up. And he was bomb happy. I mean, it's a terrible thing. That don't show any wounds. But it's the brain that's damaged. And that poor blighter, he took off over the desert, stark naked, just with a tin hat on. Rocks and everything else on the desert. We had to send a motorbike after him. And that's how he came back, sitting on a motorbike. And then they sent him back. Never saw him anymore either. Well, it wasn't long after that they pulled out. Well, there was one funny thing that happened there. We were clearing up part of the battlefield. And there was a terrific amount of Italian lorries, diesels, and they had to start them. They had like a handle on the front, and you wound them up, then released it, and that kicked the engine to start them. Well, none of us knew anything about these things, so we had five Italians, and we collected them, got them to volunteer. And they were starting all these lorries up for us. At the same time, they was going around all the Italian positions, looting them themselves, piling everything up for themselves. And you see, the Italian army was so confident that they were going to win. They had their battle uniform, and they're walking out. Uniform, all their cockades, fancy uniforms, big cap badges, all this was packed because they didn't expect any opposition and expected to walk right through Egypt. So they must have had some information from Farouk that went wrong. Now, there was one of our chaps. He got, well, a mate of mine, he got in one of these positions and he dressed himself up as a German officer, breeches, hat, everything else. and I was about 50 or 60 yards away. And he popped up out of this dugout. I knew he was there. And he put up his hands and done the old salute. And started bowling out and up Mussolini and all this business. So I just picked up a rifle and put a shot over his head. He dived back into that hole. And every time he came up, I fired over the top of his head. In the end, he put a rifle up with a British, when he did that old, and he shouted out, "I'm British, I'm British." One of the biggest laughs I had. He called me all the, in the under the sun afterwards, but it was a bit of fun. Now, then we pulled back, and the battalion was destined for Malta, and they went to Malta. And at the time, I'd been sent on a, with about five other men, an ammunition train to Cairo. And whilst we were in Cairo, the battalion went to Malta, so we couldn't go. At that time, we had to wait. Now, while we were there, we had a really fantastic time. And then we came back to a little camp just outside of Alex, a big transit camp. Even that name's gone now. I can remember some things, but not others. But while I was there, there was a commando unit came out from England. And the one that was in, the officer in charge of them, was a Captain Roger Keyes, I think his name was. Now, he was the son of the Admiral. Now this unit came out, and there they were, straight out from England. They were commandos. Well, we laughed at them. I mean, they were walking around with commando knives in their socks, and goodness knows what. They thought they were the cat's whiskers. They'd never seen a day's action in their lives for blighters. Well, they went up, supposed to be going to capture, I think it was Rommel or something. It can't just come into the desert. And I don't think any of them came back. I think Keyes got killed, didn't he? He got killed. Now, at the time, we had a prisoner of our own. He come from Hampshire. His father had been an officer on the Hampshire in the First World War when she got sunk. And he was named Harry Hampshire Rivet. This man had a terrible affliction. No one could sleep with him or near him, because he snored so loud, well, he just couldn't get near him. He also had another bad habit. He kept on trying to desert. Well, he deserted when the battalion pulled back, ready to go to Malta, and hid himself in a box wagon of a train. They found him at Merzimetru nearly dead. He hadn't taken any water, and it was like being in an oven. They brought him back. By then, the battalion had gone, and they handed him over to us. Now, it was no good us taking his word that he wouldn't escape, so we kept him in handcuffs. Because if he'd given his word, he would have broken it as quickly as he'd given it. So we had him handcuffed all the time. The only time we took him off was when he ate. when he went to the toilet, and at night time we say, make your bed, because we were in tents there. He'd make his bed. Now, lay down, get yourself comfortable. Put your arms around the tent pole, and then we'd handcuff him to the tent pole. And that's how he had to stay. Now, we stayed in there for a while until we got orders that we had to, we had a boat for Malta. So we had to hand Harry Hampshire Rivet over. We handed him over about 2 days before we moved. There was a unit in Alex that took him in, and directly he got in, he reported sick with bleeding piles. They put him in hospital. It must have been about 3 days before we moved, we handed him over. Because they put him in hospital, and in those days, the sentry used to have to sit by you if you were a prisoner, even in hospital. So by the side of his bed, he had the usual jug of water, and in the middle of the night, he drank this down, got rid of it, and he said to the sentry, get me another jug of water, will you? He was gasping. Sentry goes and takes his jug. When he come back, Rivet was gone. 2 days afterwards, we were down in Alex. And we were walking along, me and my mate. And suddenly, I sees him. He had an immaculate suit of drill on. He had three tapes. And a French girl, one on each arm, because the French girls were, as you know, Alex was half French. And I shouted at him, and he done a runner. I don't know whatever happened to him. But another funny thing happened there was a chap by the name of Tiller that was in our unit. He was at Cairo though, and he was in the officer's mess because he'd had what they thought was TB, and they said he'd got over it a bit. They had him in the officer's mess, and he was in on every fiddle there was, and he'd got order of some order forms from the Royal Army Service Corps. And he'd got in with some of the Arabs because he was running a bar himself because he had a girlfriend and she was running it for him. And he put in an order form for a lorry load of petrol. So this lorry load of petrol turned up to where he had to pick it up. Driver, Royal Army Service Corps driver, Bill Tiller. Got himself dressed up in army blues, which he'd worn in the mess.